Hello and welcome to the Final Bell, the official Geelong Cats podcast. It's great to have you all with us again. Footy, we know, is returning. We do have a return date. We also now have a draw. Rounds 2 to round 5 is locked in. We're going to talk all about that. Jack Henry, young gun at the Cats, is going to join us a little bit later on as well. We'll get to your questions, but I want to welcome my usual partners in crime here today that are with me every single week. I'll start with you, Stokesy. Welcome to you. And Stokesy, it's National Reconciliation Week this week. So no doubt you've been extremely busy, but big welcome to you.
Thanks very much, Lingy. It's very nice and polite of you to introduce me that way. National Reconciliation Week this week. The contribution not only to what Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have done for our game, but in society itself. And reconciliation this week is about coming together, which is in perfect timing in the crisis that we are in at the moment. So, we pay our respects to the Wadawurrung people and we continue to pay our respects and learn and listen for the journey along.
Now, well said, Stokesy. We're going to talk a little bit too about the contribution of some of the wonderful Indigenous players across the Geelong Footy Club's history. There's one guy I want to focus in on and lock in on who I don't think gets enough credit for one of the most magnificent grand final displays I've ever witnessed in any club's history, but certainly in the Geelong Footy Club's. I reckon he needs more of a pump up. But welcome to you, Scotty Gullen. I reckon you've had a little trim up. I mean, you've still got the beard, yes. But I reckon you've manscaped that little number.
I have, gentlemen. After last week, I just felt I was letting the side down, you two clean-shaven individuals. And, it's been a bit of a trim. The hair hasn't, so I have to have a hat on. But, no, the beard's been remodelled.
And you got is that the Celtics I can see?
Yeah, I'm a Celtics man, Stokes.
Man, good boy.
You know I have the love of the green.
That's right.
Well, hopefully the NBA, not too far away, might get a restart.
They're going to play in Vegas, aren't they? Or Disneyland or something. What's going
Maybe
on there?
A hub in Vegas and a hub in Orlando, Disneyland. So,
some worst places. Exciting.
Good luck with a hub in Vegas.
As we always are, we are brought to you by Panther Tyres. So big thanks to the team at Panther Tyres. If you need anything for your car sorted, we've mentioned before that they'll come and pick up your car. They'll get it all fixed up, whatever you need, and drop it back to you. If you are working from home and you are isolating, the team at Panther Tyres will take care of you big time. The draw, let's touch on that quickly before we get to one of those performances in the grand final that I really want to reminisce about, the 2011 grand final. But the draw is locked in. The Cats playing Friday night footy against the old rivals, the Hawks, at GMHBA Stadium. They've got the Blues and the Gold Coast Suns at GMHBA Stadium as well. And squeezed in the middle of those two games is a game against the D's at the MCG. Everybody's writing this up, Scotty, as the Cats are the big winners in this draw. Three home games. And against teams, you'd think, on last year's form, though we can almost throw last year's form out a little bit, given the interrupted season we've had, they should beat. Are the Cats the big winners of this early part of the draw?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, them and Brisbane, I think, were the two who came out on top. Hawthorn haven't played down at Geelong since 2006. Big tick. And there's momentum for if the Cats can keep it rolling that finals will happen here if they do the right thing. But for the first 4 weeks, you couldn't ask for a better draw if you're Geelong. I mean, it is an absolute red carpet job.
And Stokesy, with that good draw, there is uncertainty about how teams will present in rounds 2, 3 and 4 because of what we've all gone through. But given the dream section of the draw, the 4 weeks, it does add a little bit of pressure, anticipation. The Cats have got to win early. They've got to make sure they're 3 out of the next 4 or preferably 4 out of 4.
Yeah,
because they don't want to waste this good opportunity early on.
I think that's absolutely right, because maybe if we do are able to win all 4 of those games, then later on in the season when players start to tire and start to a bit of wear and tear, we'll be able to rotate our players a little bit more and be able to, you know, get ready for the finals. I'm not so much in agreement with both you guys in the sense that this is a perfect draw for us. We've always seemed to fail, our game style seems to fail when we come to the MCG, where the grand final will probably be played. So I understand that we need to win to get there. And if there was crowds, I would never want to take a game away from our home stadium. But the fact that we've done so well over the last couple of years, or since 2007, we've always been thereabouts, but the hurdle that we've broken down in the last probably 10 years is the MCG. So maybe we needed to get more exposure there. Maybe that might happen later on at the end of the draw, but I'm not saying it's doom and gloom. I'm just saying that there are certain aspects of our game that the way that we play, or the style that we play, is not suited for the MCG.
But I reckon, Stokes, I mean, it's going to be weird. Everything's going to be weird for the first month. So to be in familiar surrounds of that weirdness, that's got to be a big tick.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Because if we get to the stage where we're flying and we're winning those games, that's great. Well, Scotty, we're always looking at the good side of things. What happens
if we lose games?
Okay, it's not. Just because we have home games doesn't necessarily mean we're going to win them.
No, I agree. It helps.
No, my argument to your point, though, Stokesy, is if Geelong is going to be a really great team, and that's ultimately a grand final team, premiership winning team, they're going to win anywhere. And not to say back in our day, but it's going to be a bit of that. When you're a really good team, we still won at home, but. Yeah. We also won at the MCG, and you also won interstate. Richmond I know they have had a lot of games at the MCG, but they still win in different places. So I would say that the issue at the MCG is at time against really good opposition and ultimately in preliminary finals is that we've just got a couple of weaknesses in the team and in the game that need to be fixed up, and that's what the team's working towards fixing. I don't think it's a ground thing. I think it's just a couple of little spots or a little 5 or 10 minute patches hurt us that need to be fixed up. And therefore, wherever the game is played, you would hope that it then stands up. The MCG magnifies any of your weaknesses because it is so wide and the holes can be opened up, and it magnifies any little thing that's not being done spot on. But I think if you ultimately become a really great team, you don't have those gaps in the way that you play.
You get it back in our club and your players and the coaches to be able to come up with something that will suit the MCG better than it has in the recent or in the past. But where I come from as a supporter, when I sit here and I watch when I'm watching at home, is the fact that we go to the MCG, we lose a couple of games, and we come back to our own club, we win two in a row, then everything's hunky-dory again. The mistakes and what the holes that have opened up get pushed under the rug because we've won two home games. So I just feel that it's great that we're playing at home. And when we have crowds, the money that brings into this great town, the businesses and all that, it's unbelievable. But at the end of the day, we're about winning a flag and we haven't won one for 10 years. So I'm playing devil's advocate here and saying that maybe we need a game plan that is better suited for the MCG, not for GMHBA Stadium.
Well, I like what you say though, Stokesy, in that if it is there are some weaknesses identified, it gets exposed, perhaps on the MCG, wherever it might be, interstate, come back two home games in a row, win, and it all swept under the carpet. You identifying that's really important. That then, to me, highlights the challenge that within the inner sanctum, the team environment, that is brought to the fore and held there even after a couple of wins, and those standards or those little weaknesses aren't just swept away. They actually need to be stronger after a win and say, okay, we got the win. However, this is not the way we want to be playing. Scotty used to love when I talked about the process all the time, Scotty. Well, it was so much more important.
Ended my journalistic career, Cameron, listening to you.
Stokesy's point highlights it though, Scotty, that if you're winning, you can't let that just paper over the fact that there are improvements that need to be made. It's not just, well, all's good because we won and all's bad because we lost.
Oh, no doubt.
The process is ultimately what gets you success.
Now, a lot is said about this ground, but for the listeners, just from a player's perspective, I get it's 10 metres narrower, et cetera, and it's easier to defend, but what is it, just briefly from you two? I mean, you guys have lived this. Why is this ground easier for this team to to defend or play on than others.
Well, it's just the skinniness of the ground, isn't it?
It's as simple as that. You're used to it and others aren't?
Yeah, you don't get dragged. Once you set up defensively, you don't get dragged wider trying to cover that, you know, outside opposition player, and then a hole in the middle opens up and they can go bang. Whereas the MCG, there is so much space there, isn't there, Stokesy?
100%. It's the work rate between going forward and back. I think with playing at home, you can kind of dawdle your way through and the ball sort of stays around your area. With the MCG, because it's so opened, if you aren't willing to work both ways, you'll get exposed very, very quickly. And we have a tremendous back line. I think our back line is underrated. I think our back line is nearly the best. But even the best defences will get exposed by a midfield that can push the ball straight through the middle of the corridor to an open forward line. So when we play home, it's not as open. It's more confined. It's difficult to get through the defence mechanisms that the club put in.
No, I agree with you, Stokesy. As I mentioned, National Reconciliation Week this week. Stokesy gave us the introduction there. And I thought it was just a nice time to, I mean, celebrate some of the amazing Indigenous players that we've had over the years, like yourself, Stokesy. Sadly, we lost the great Polly Farmer recently, one of the all-time greats of the Geelong Footy Club and also the entire AFL. Young blokes like Brandon Parfitt and Quentin Narkle now running around. The great Rockin' Ronnie Burns, who kindly gave me my first goal in AFL footy. Thank you, Ronald. But the one I wanted to celebrate a little bit, Stokesy.
Yep.
Playing in the black and white stripes these days, which I don't love seeing.
Yep.
But his days in the blue and white hoops. Travis Barco, I think, turned in, I think an underrated career at the Cats. I loved what he did. His commitment to all the hard work and that transition running that you were just referring to, that really good high half forwards and midfielders do in good teams. He's underrated. But that grand final that he played in 2011 is still criminally underrated for how great a game it was. His impact in that game, 21 touches, half of those contested, 3 goals and 2 goal assists, got us off to the flying start with the opening goal and the first couple of goals. That goal that he kicks in the last quarter is one of the most beautiful things I've witnessed on a footy field. His work rate, his effort to get to contest after contest, deep in defence, to the wing, and then just the almost effortless left foot across the body under pressure finish of the goal was superb. What are your recollections from Travi on that day and the career that he had with the Cats?
Yeah, I think Travi, a lot of people forget, we got Travi when he was 17. From Central Districts at Elizabeth. We came and I just remember the first 2 years of how many times he'd fall asleep in team meetings and Bomber would have to wake him up. It was comic. You could just start hearing snoring and there's Travi just snoring in the middle of a team meeting and Bomber would start laughing. So obviously a very talented player, came with high expectations and then took on the mantle of taking on number five. Like there's been, I don't know, too many people who, he was a shy kid, he was quiet, but he took it on and he wore it with pride because of the Polly Farmer aspect of it. His grand final that day was unbelievable, helped us win a flag. And I remember he kicked that goal and I just said to him, we just need, I need you, give me 10 more minutes and we've got this, we've got a flag. He doesn't get enough recognition for that. But he was just a hard worker and that's what I loved about him. He probably wasn't the most gifted runner. His skin folds probably weren't always the best. But once he got to that training track, he worked his butt off. And, you know, he's still around. He must be close to 40, I think.
I just looked it up, Stokes. He's 32 and he's played 221 games. Now, my dealings with Travi when he was young and starting off, I mean, he was an exciting kid, but there's no way I thought he'd be still going at 32 and playing 220 games. You know what I mean? He's made an amazing career for himself. A little bit surprised a few, I reckon, with the longevity.
Yeah, I think so. I think as well. I think he's changed a lot in his life now that he's got a young family. You know, I think he saw the writing on the wall at Geelong pretty quickly, and made a very good, very smart move for himself and his family to go to Collingwood, which offered him a better deal. And, you know, we've had some really good players over time. You know, obviously, Polly's number one by country mile. But someone that gets underrated a little bit is Gary Malari.
Malarkey.
Who represented Victoria and WA. And sorry to disrespect to pronounce your name wrong, but I read up on him about 2 years ago when we were going through some of our greats, and he represented WA and Victoria in the 80s, which that to me alone says that he probably would be number two on the list of Aboriginal players who have played at our game.
My dad raved about him, Regan. Yep. He was just a wonderful footballer, just so good defensively, but marked the ball, could do it all. Was just a brilliant footballer. And as you said, that's sort of peak State of Origin time, yeah, isn't it, through the 80s, and representing both, was obviously an incredible footballer. I missed him, Scotty. Did you ever see him play?
No, I just missed him as well. Just always heard the legend of Gary Malarkey, but never really remember him playing.
And I think
One thing I just wanted to add about Travi before we move on was, I understand what you're saying, Scotty, about, you know, just longevity in the game and that. But I'm kind of, part of me is not surprised by that, because the one thing he always had was total appreciation from his teammates. And I reckon it's the same at Collingwood. The off-the-ball work that he does and the chasing and just getting a hand on an opposition player to affect a kick. He was doing that from the first senior game he played at the Cats, where all he wanted to do was be appreciated, loved and respected by his teammates. He'd come up after the game, he goes, oh, did I pressure enough? Did I? And this was a bloke who was so skilled and had that burst of speed and could kick an amazing goal. All he wanted to do were the little team things, and he's done it his whole time at Geelong, and he went to Collingwood, and you still see other players at Collingwood getting the rewards and kicking a nice goal because of a lot of the work that Travi's doing. So I reckon whenever a coach, Nathan Buckley, goes to his players and says, oh, you know, we're borderline decision here, is it Trav or is it someone else? I reckon every one of his teammate coaches don't even think about leaving Travi out. He's just so good for what the team needs.
I think this is what happened with us and with Richmond, is what happens if you can play in a successful team and see that playing your role will help you win a grand final, your aura and your identity goes up with that. And Travis done that perfectly. Played his role, didn't go outside of it. And like you said, he's probably one of the most skillful players I know, but knew, if I can just do this, I'll always be respected. And I think his legend's grown because of the fact that he's been around successful teams. And that's what happens when you have players who are willing to play their role, that it breeds success.
And he hurts people when he tackles.
Oh, he does. He does.
That is, and just...
That last goal he kicked, though, that should be replayed more.
Oh.
From start to finish. And put one of those spotlights on him and track him. It's a phenomenal goal. And, you know, we see the great goals in AFL, VFL history, and they're all highlighted. Travis should be right there amongst it.
Oh, you know,
in defensive 50.
Do you know whose goal always gets highlighted that game? Is you, when we're up by 30, game's already done. you're 5 minutes out from goal, no pressure, and you're carrying on like you've just won us a game.
Yeah. I don't know. From my memory, we're about 3 points down and I've kicked the winner, Stokesy. I don't know what you're on about. The greatest goals in grand final history.
You're worse than Cam Mooney. Your memories have lost it.
Well, actually, that is true. My memory is going very, very quickly. I have seen Jack Henry's little screen pop up here on our Zoom call. So we're going to get to Jack Henry on the other side of the break. We've got your questions coming up a little bit later on. But just before we go to the break, we really appreciate all our sponsors and supporters at this time, given the tough economical situation. And for medical imaging in Geelong, the Cats choose Lake Imaging as their preferred provider. In keeping up with the latest technology, Lake Imaging is proud to launch their new mobile app called Lake Images. You can view your radiology images, such as X-ray and ultrasound scans, using your smartphone. You can even share your images with family and friends or other healthcare professionals. The Lake Images app is available to download today. For more information, check out their website, www.lakeimaging.com.au. If you have a referral for medical imaging, choose experience, choose Lake Imaging. Let's take a break. Jack Henry, cool little Mo, I think he's got rolling at the moment. Looking good there. He's up next.
At Deakin, digital is in our DNA. With 40 years of experience in distance and online learning, discover why we're the number one Australian public university for overall educational experience. Premium, proven, loved. Study online at Deakin. Applications now open.
Welcome back. You're with us on to the final bell, brought to you by Panther Tyres. Appreciate their support right throughout this season. Being able to bring you this podcast through the ISO time, but we are moving out of isolation and into some footy. We know the Cats are taking on the Hawks Friday night, the 12th of June at GMHBA Stadium. And one man who would be very excited with the landing of the draw would be Jack Henry. Jack, welcome to you.
Lee, thanks for having me. Very excited for that draw. Very excited.
Taking on the Hawks at GMHBA Stadium. The rivalry's still there, isn't it? As one of the younger guys, do you still sense the big Cats-Hawks rivalry?
Yeah, definitely. I was lucky enough to debut on the Easter Monday, and it was just the big build-up, even more so for me because of that rivalry. And, yeah, it's a special game away to versus the Hawks. Even more special to have them down here for once.
It is good. Not too much trouble for you there, Jackie boy. How's that mo going? Tell us about this mo. How long have you been growing it for? Because
embarrassingly over the whole ISO period. I'm just trying to take out the title of the worst mo at the club.
There couldn't be any more worse than that.
Brad Cloke,
entire isolation Brad Cloke. Period. Close.
He's pretty close.
Now, Jack, how was it getting back to contact training for the first time for a long time? What was that like?
Yeah, it was really good. It's different. It's strange when you take it away from you for a couple of months and then you're not really even allowed to touch anyone for a couple of months and then go straight into hard physical contact and blokes trying to jump up, take speckies on you and you're tackling each other. It's different. It actually, pulled up pretty sore today actually from it.
There would have been a couple who'd be very overexcited. Teammates who you were clearly red line fever, white line fever?
Oh, Big Sav, he always loves jumping into your back. He doesn't know when to control himself, but sorry, one second. Dog needs to go out. Yeah, but he doesn't hold back, the big fella.
We've got technology going off all over the shop there with Jack.
Maybe give us an insight of what you did in the break that you had and what you got up to and who you got up with. Who was your training partner?
Yeah, it was pretty. A lot of blokes all went home. Obviously, all the interstate boys and. Mark O'Connor just lives around the corner from me, so we played a fair bit of soccer early days just to have a little bit of a break from flat out footy, because we didn't want to go too hard too early because we didn't know how long you were going to be sort of on the sidelines for, so we just sort of tried to keep generally pretty fit, do some running sessions, muck around the soccer ball and obviously keep kicking footy. And yeah, then when we sort of got more of an idea of what we were doing, we progressed into more footy stuff and just I tried to do a lot of skill work just to make sure I'm pretty sharp when that all comes back, I guess. Like, keep getting lots of kicked in and getting your hands nice and clean and, obviously keep that fitness as well. And now I've got the few weeks going into, the round two.
I saw a photo with you and your brothers doing a bit of training as well now. Let me get the name. Ollie's the younger brother, isn't he?
Yeah, Ollie's the younger one.
So is he at the Falcons?
Yeah.
So obviously trying to come through. I mean, doing some training with him. How's he found it? Just out of interest for these young guys who want to put their name up to get drafted, and not having that opportunity. Is it all a bit strange? Is it a bit stressful for him, wondering if he's going to get a chance to showcase his talents?
Yeah, I definitely would be, I'm sure. I feel pretty bad for him, that sort of year 12 year and all that draft year and all that sort of turning 18 and everything. It's sort of all been a bit ruined by all of this, but I don't know. I feel like he's probably, he still wants to be optimistic with it all, I guess, but yeah, it's more just out of his hands, out of his control. Like if he's going to make it, I guess down the track, if he's good enough, he'll eventually sort of find his way through no matter how he goes with all the journey, but sort of, yeah, that sort of thing about how he's been taken out of his hands and can't control how the draft and everything's going to look. It's pretty tough.
Do you think that the unknown, and especially with your younger brother going through it, that building this resilience, and I think for a long, long time, our pathway programs have been set up to, you know, they take them to America, they take them to, you know, China, and they do all these types of things with all these young kids coming through, that once they get to a club, there's sort of a expectation that everything's kind of easy. Do you think that with what your brother's going through, with the unknown of school, the unknown of the draft and all that, obviously you've got some pull at the footy club, so he's worried he'll come through he'll come to the Geelong club. But do you think the resilience of building these kids and what they're going through at the moment will actually help them in the long run instead of it being an easy run? And I'm not saying that everyone does have it easy, but I'm just saying that the majority of the time coming through the pathway programs, it is a pretty easy ride.
Yeah, I think it definitely will build on his resilience. I mean, it's obviously, it's a big road bump in whatever sort of journey he's going on. So if he does end up finding his way through it and getting his way onto a list or whatever he does do in the future, it's definitely going to be something that he's overcome at a pivotal point in his life, being at that sort of age of 18, year 12, and his studies and everything, and footy and sports and all friends and everything. It's sort of, to get through this and come out the other side, you'd have to build a lot of resilience, I'm sure. But
Now, Jack, I'm the track and field expert out of these three individuals. Mark,
established expert is a strong word.
No, let me go. Blitz gets all the love, but according to the AFL media guide, you were a champion junior decathlete. Now, my time in track and field, that means you're not very good at one thing. You just average it.
That sums up someone else on our podcast.
Mate, that's an unusual event to be good at. What happened?
To be good at's probably not the right word to say, but it's, yeah, like you said, I probably couldn't quite hack it in a few individual events, and I'm sort of mediocre, okay, but never going to quite make it. So then thought, give it a shot. I'm good at three or four events and then sort of work out the rest of them, but
how was the jab and the high jump? What let you down?
What let me down? A lot of the throwing events I was hopeless at. I just had no idea. But I went all right in the hurdles and the high jump and long jump and all a few of those events. But yeah, I had to try pole vault out, try and learn that in a season. It was good fun, actually. Really enjoyed it. But
Scott, carry on like you actually have done pole vaulting before.
Mate, I've watched it. I'm too scared to even think about that, Stoker.
I've watched UFC. Doesn't mean that I know what it's like to get hit in the face by a fist.
No, I'm telling you, pole vault's the scariest thing I've seen live.
I can imagine. I'm only joking, Scotty.
I know you are. What? So, did you win state junior or something? Just to end this discussion.
I came second at the states, and then I made it to the nationals and came third. And it's all, as in the media, gets blown out a bit, thinking, oh, you're going to be making it to the Olympics and all this sort of thing. But no, I was never going to really probably go down that path.
Don't play it down, Jackie boy. You go see the mate.
Brian Taylor will seize this. He'll love this. You watch.
Jack, have you compared high jump heights with Tommy Hawkins? Because he was a high jump junior star.
I'm not sure exactly how high he jumped, but I think I might have just had him by a few centimetres.
What's your height?
Oh, I got 199, but...
Ooh!
199?
Yeah,
that 99 centimetres taller than me. Shit.
From memory, I think Tommy was 194, 95.
Yeah, he's probably got a bit more to get over the bar than me, but... Good effort from him, though.
They put a chocolate twirl up the top for him to jump. He loves his twirls.
Your whole family, though, Jack, athletics background, mum and dad, and older brother's Tom, isn't it?
Yeah, Tom.
Yeah, Tom. The whole family's had a massive athletics background, haven't they?
Yeah, I guess so. Tom was always the really good high jumper. Like he jumped 207 centimetres, so I didn't quite get in, but I was living in his shadow for a fair chunk of my childhood. But yeah, we've always just sort of been very active and love getting out. Dad used to run around on the track back in the day, and Mum's been a gym instructor for 30 years now and still is, so she's he's very fit and always kept us in good nick back in the day as well. So, yeah, we've always been pretty sporty.
Now, what's the go with all these blokes coming back with colour hair?
I don't know, mate. I think they just want a bit of attention or something.
I sent a group message out. You need to take control. All right, Jackie Boyer. I'm not in there. I can't be telling them. I don't want to see pink hair.
Name, Stokesy. Who's got the colour? I saw Quinton Narkle had pink hair.
There's a rookie. Because he's a gorgeous man.
What about Blake?
Blake, tell Blake that's got to go. Surely.
he's a rookie.
One of the misfits, he's got to go.
Yeah.
Well, anyone else got any strange haircuts or terrible mows?
Well, yeah, I've got the terrible mo sort of going for the group. But yeah, right. Yeah, too many, and also my hair's longer than it's probably ever been, but that's probably just been lazy, I guess. But there's nothing too outrageous other than the coloured hair going on.
I did notice that the skipper, Joel Selwood, took offence to something that Zach Toohey said on our podcast last week, that he hated Group 3 and that Group 4 were the main men. And is it Group 3 have rolled in looking... sharp as sharp in suits and stepped up the fashion?
I did notice that, actually. The boys all thought they were going to the races, but a bit of overkill in my opinion. But I'll leave that little dispute with Reggie. I'm no real comment there, but I did speak to Reggie. He thinks that got the editing of this got chopped up a bit and made it seem worse than it was.
What about Nida, the assistant coach in the worst looking suit I've ever seen, about 30 years old, holding a bottle of wine? What was his role in this?
Oh, he's just the coach, I guess, the leader of the group.
Don't worry about Nida. If there is something going on in the footy club, Mr. Wombat himself, he's planning it, he's leading it, he's an underrated troublemaker at that football club. I wouldn't be surprised if it was all his idea.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either.
Exactly.
Where can we expect you again this year, Jack? Down back with the Misfits or any other little roles being trained during this break or pre-season?
No, I've just been training down back, Lingy. I'm pretty comfortable down there. I've tried it up forward and I'll go wherever I need to go, but... yeah, I'm pretty comfortable down the back line.
So what you're pretty much saying, Scotty, is you're playing back.
Not directly. <I like it. laughs>
Best position for you, I reckon, Jack. That'll be very nice. Scotty, have you got any last question for Jack before we let him go? He's got to get to his COVID-19 testing, the up-the-nose one.
Oh, I just want to know if Tokyo is on his agenda.
Tokyo.
Tokyo 2021.
Or maybe Paris. Maybe we'll do a bit more footy and then we'll go to the Olympics.
Yeah, got to get better at some more events, I think.
Mate, outstanding. This is going to haunt you, this information. You know that.
Well, don't train too hard for the Olympics, Jack. We want you in the blue and white hoops for the next 10 or so years. All the best for the season, restarting round 2 against the Hawks. Thank you for coming on and having a chat with us.
Perfect. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Jackie boy.
See you later.
Great to chat with Jack. Thanks, Henry, mate. One of the young guns of the footy team, and a big year coming up for him as part of that really good Cats defence. We're going to take another break. We'll get to your questions in just a second.
At Deakin, digital is in our DNA. With 40 years of experience in distance and online learning, discover why we're the number one Australian public university for overall educational experience. Premium, proven, loved. Study online at Deakin. Applications now open.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on to the final bell, brought to you by Panther Tyres. Love Panther Tyres support throughout this season. And as I mentioned before, if you need anything for your car sorted, just get down and check out the guys at Panther Tyres. They'll pick it up. They'll do the work. They'll drop it back. You don't even have to leave your house if you're working from home. So big thanks to them. Also, big thanks to Deakin University. They came on board last week and we found out a little bit about Scotty Gullen's past and how he's become the master journalist that he is and the work that went in there. But we appreciate Deakin Uni's support. Digital is in Deakin University's DNA. With 40 years of experience in distance, and online learning, discover why they're the number one Australian public university for overall educational experience. Premium, proven, loved, study online at Deakin. So big thanks to our sponsors. That allows us to basically just talk nonsense each week and have
apparently last week was chat. Last week was the highest rating podcast, apparently. That's really? What my mail is. Don't know why.
Because there's a lot of people out there want to know how to get high jobs without doing nothing.
I wouldn't call it a high job. That's the nicest thing you've said to me.
Oh, well, you look like you're in a villa every weekend.
Oh, that's true.
Now, podcast.
Now, I forgot something last week too, Scotty, and I know this isn't a visual medium.
Oh, no.
I forgot to bring up that wonderful photo, the Herald Sun team photo. It was in the paper a couple of weeks ago, taking on a news team from Adelaide, from South Australia, and Scott Gullen just off to the side there with long, flowing, luscious hair.
Great hair. Innocent.
Would have been about, 25 years of age?
No. Well, no, it was 1992, I think. Two or three.
How old does that make you?
I was 21 or two, something like that.
Oh, you look baby-faced, young, innocent. Stokesy, I text Scotty and said, hey, Scotty, I love the photo of you in the Herald Sun. Your hair was looking lovely, blah, blah, blah. You know, just a bit of friendliness, thinking, pumping him up. But you know what he wrote back to me? not ideal to have this in the paper. A little bit of false humility from Scotland. Before he then finishes with, but I did do the Big V proud with 40 and two goals.
Right, that's probably under.
Up for himself. You know, I'm just stating facts.
I think that's why it's good to, when we're getting older, we add things to them. By the time I'm 60, I would have been the reason that we won 07 and 2000. And I would have played in 09.
That's exactly how I approach that story, Stokes.
Exactly.
Leather
and a headband wearing Mark Robinson snagged 5, Scotty.
Oh, no, he could play the Chief. Which
I'm wondering about the quality of the opposition.
Oh, the quality of the opposition was, let's just say, very poor. But the Chief could play. He was a good player.
Mark Robinson could play football.
Oh, yeah. He'd mark everything. Sure. I played with him at West Preston as well.
Is he a West Preston boy?
Yeah, I played a season there with him.
I'll play the year for the Roosters.
Oh, hang on. This is getting better. What year, Stoker?
When I finished AFL, me and
Andrew. Did you go there, did you?
Yeah.
Well, you and I are in the Hall of Fame there.
Oh, look,
and Robbo.
I played a year.
So did I. That was a really scary sort of setup out there.
Oh, look, I had a couple of road rage incidents that I was scared of. But I had my boys backing me up at training. So that's all I worried about. But me and Andrew Walker went there as a tag team because we are obviously really close off field, and we got bummed out in the finals, and then we left, and then I've gone back to back. So I don't know what it says about me and Walker. Yeah.
Next week, we'll have a West Preston podcast. We can relive our great days.
The Mighty Roosters.
West Preston reunion. I like it. All I'm saying is if Robbo snagged 5 and you've had 40 and kicked 2, I don't know about the opposition you're playing in that Herald Sun game.
Cameron, we need a whole episode to discuss my football career. It's undervalued.
Question time. We appreciate all the listeners sending in their questions. We try to get to as many as we can each week. Let's fire away with a few here. This one's from Mitch Stokesy. Favourite goal that you've kicked in your football career, and for me as well? My one has got to be
the first one.
Carry on like a pork chop. No, my last one, Scotty.
Oh, the last
goal I ever kicked. That was certainly the favourite moment when it's gone through the big sticks. I nearly had the moment where I've won a final. I've kicked the goal against St Kilda in 2010. celebrating with seconds to go. What a goal, what a win. That would have been one of those moments of how special was that. And our great mate Cam Mooney's gone and given away a free kick to James.
Still carries on like it wasn't a free kick. Like I'm anti-umpires, but that was a free kick.
Oh, it cost me my moment of magic. What about you, Stokesy?
I've got two goals that lived with me. My last game at Kardinia Park. In my last game with the boys, with Stevie and Kel, was able to get on the end and kick that one. But the one that stands out the most to me is obviously my relationship with Moons. And it was, I think it was 2011. He played VFL probably for about 4 or 5 weeks. He was really struggling. And at the start of the game, he's come up to me and sort of said, mate, can you just really look for me? I need you to help me out today. And his body was falling apart. And I had the ball around the 15-metre mark. And he had about 4 blokes on him. And there was a couple of open blokes. But I hit him and he marked it, and then watching him kick it and just the joy of being able to help him get his... I think he ended up kicking 5 that day, so probably take credit for that as well. But to do that for my great mate Moons was probably one of the most special moments in my career.
Very nice, mate. Always a team player. And I remember that game. Yeah, that was when Moons came and I was thinking, oh, yeah, Moons, maybe his body can just hold up.
Yeah,
for one more run at it. I think he'd announced his retirement
during
the season, but was going to be at the end of the season and gave it one last crack. And still play. It's one of the things that isn't spoken about a lot. The role that him and Darren Milburn played in that last final series. They ultimately didn't play in the grand final, but still had a huge influence on the group, both Moons and Dasher. And
absolutely,
that's a nice moment, Stokesy. Good one. This one's from Ryan. What was your number one snack at quarter breaks and pre-game? Were you an eater during the game?
No, I wasn't an eater. I loved a coffee before the game, so I always used to walk around. Rookie, I used to remember Rookie having, he always had a can of Coke, which was strange. Harry Taylor was always weird with his snacks and meals, but and the only thing I ever really liked before a game, if it was a drive up to Melbourne, was I love my sour worms.
They go quick.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
You go through a pack very quick on that trip, Stoker.
Look, sometimes those trips to Melbourne were the difficult ones because you don't know whether to have a meal. And but yes, sour worms was mine. What about you? What about you, Lingy?
I was a big eater the day before. And a big pasta the night before. Day of the game, I did not like eating much at all. I wanted to have a pretty empty stomach.
Yep.
I'd have a small bowl of cereal and maybe, say, a banana. That'd be it. And the night game, a really light lunch, super light.
Yep.
So not much before the game. Breaks the same. Maybe a couple of snakes if I were half-time. Just a bit of a glucose hit. But no, I was a real small... I then ate... to the entire country after the game.
Yeah.
Whatever the great Ado, the chef at the footy club, one of the greatest men ever, whatever he cooked up after the game, I went in and just set myself up and just propped up in a corner and consumed everything and then took takeaways for the car trip home. And I would have eaten twice my body weight after a game. Was pretty good on the tooth. Very good on the tooth. As I'm sure you remember, Stokes.
Yes.
It was a constant battle with skin folds over the years, but I managed to just win that battle at times.
Plump, full forward, Cameron.
Tim asked the question
every time
that we have been pumping up constantly through this, and deservedly so. And Joel Corey was a very quiet man in the media. Was he a vocal leader within the group? Tim, I'll answer this, Stokesy, by saying he wasn't vocal with his voice. He was extremely, if you want to call it vocal, with his actions and just a look and just almost a vibe you got from him, like, that's not good enough, step up. I mean, I loved your story a couple of weeks ago when he actually belted you in the guts, saying that you should have prepared a little better. Everything about Joel just oozed demanding of standards and wanting the best for his team and his club and wanted to win. I mean, he didn't need to say much.
He didn't say anything. I used to love, I still remember clear as day, he played Carlton and I'm out by 10 metres, 30 metres out of goal and kick the ball. It's tumbleweed. It's gone this way, that way, this way. I've dropped the ball and it's gone out. They've gone up the other end. And the grunt and look that it was my fault that I dropped this thing that was gone 10 different ways was unbelievable. We get to the bench. And all I hear was, and you know, I can't help but laugh. And I'm like, kick and drop punt, I would have marked it. And he's cracked the sudsy with me. And after the game, it was just the knob was, So you were respected by Smithy, the good old grunter. I called him Walter by the end of his career because Walter, one of the characters out of Grumpy Old Men. Which suited him to the T because he didn't say much, but he was just.
He was a genius with the media in that, in the end, not even the journos requested interviews with him. It was just like, nah, that's just nicest guy, say hello to you, but that is it. There is no more coming out of Joel Corey.
Bill Belichick of the AFL.
Bill Belichick, correct. He was amazing in leadership meetings. He was in the leadership group right throughout the whole period he was there. Brilliant leader. He'd sit there and not speak. But he'd take it all in. He'd just keep looking around and stare at you intently at times when you're making a point. But then when he did speak, it was the most succinct but practical and right on the money comment, and everyone in the room would go, oh yeah, you're spot on. Why did we overcomplicate this bank? Move on. And Joel had just sorted it out. And away we go. So he was brilliant. I did notice and sadly Stokesy, we've seen across the whole competition, a number of our former teammates and great mates have been affected and let go by their clubs with the reshuffles within football departments. And Joel Corey, I think, not at the Bulldogs, stood down along with some other people. That is one man, whoever gets his services, and it might still be the Bulldogs next year, whoever gets his services as a development and assistant coach will be the luckiest club in the world because his teaching of craft and developing of just the subtleties of playing in the midfield and the stoppage work and the approach that you need to take to become a really great AFL football is first class. He's one that is going to get a job somewhere and whoever that club is, and I quietly just hope that it's the Cats,
hopefully,
he would be an outstanding get. For any football club.
Look at who he's made at that team, Marcus Bontempelli. There's no secret that he's become who he is because of Joel Corey.
Bont has movements in games. I know Bont is this superb mover, but the arms free and the tuning of the body and that is, it's so much of Joel Corey's craft that he's taught. I'm desperate for him to end up at the Cats one day, but whatever journey he goes on, whichever club it is, gee, they're going to be lucky.
I think he's underrated about his intelligence. I think he knows the game of footy inside and out, but I think it's his intelligence away from of the game is what really has struck me. I mean, I've had countless conversations about settlement of our great country and the knowledge that he has about that and something going on over here is incredible. And sometimes in the industry, we have a soft side because we think our players need to be nurtured. And what I loved about Joel and the way that I found to be respected by Joel was that there was a brutal reality to him. Was, yes, there is a cuddle side and there's an element that, I'm here with you with the journey, but at the end of the day, there's a reality that you got to work your ass off. And I don't think he'll struggle to find another job, to be honest. He's one of the million. He's one of the rippers.
What game was that famous tackle? In the final?
It was a smother.
A smother,
that's it.
O'Brien? 2007 prelim final.
Oh, that was game changing.
Yeah, Brian.
O'Brien took 10 minutes to put it on his foot.
Yeah. And he's not only smothered, but he actually took possession of
the ball.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
He's a phenomenon, that man. Last one before we do finish up. Olivia asks, what was your go-to pre-game song, Stokesy? Were you a headphones man before the game?
Yeah, I was headphones. You might find it hard to believe, but I love my country and Western. Alan Jackson, Brooks and Dunn's were my probably my favourite, my go-to.
Keithy Urban.
Yeah, Keithy Urban. I love Keithy Urban. I love his older stuff than his new stuff. There's a few of us who used to love him. We used to sneak off to Keith Urban concerts and put the hoods on because we were a bit embarrassed. That we're
you kept that one quiet.
Yeah, but Brooks and Dunn's, Alan Jackson were definitely my go-to. Just before I used to run out, Neo Lights was my song that got me going. So, yeah. That was definitely my music. I tried to pretend like I was listening to 50 Cent and Tupac and stuff, but
I
wasn't.
For all these years, I thought you were listening to a bit of hip-hop and rap. I wasn't a headphones before the game. I just go off and chat to the Docs, Jeff Allen and Chris Bradshaw and Duncan Callaway and just hang and chat, talk surfing and golf and whatever. In the car, I'd always drive to the game by myself because I like my own music. Mine was real old school and probably not what you'd call fire-up music. It was a bit of Simon and Garfunkel and a little bit of the Beatles.
Wow.
A little bit of the Beach Boys.
Driving the Beach Boys, you and Stevie J hanging out together.
Love the Beach Boys. One of the greatest moments I've ever had, fortunate through my association with Channel 7, was I was taking Dad to a Beach Boys concert. He loved the Beach Boys in Melbourne. But as part of it, they got me to fly with Dad to do an interview with the Beach Boys. Brian Wilson was there as well. Dad and I got to sit in on an interview for 30 minutes or so with the entire group of the Beach Boys. And Dad got to meet all of these people that he'd loved since he was maybe 12 or 13 years of age. So that's still one of my highlights. And we got the great photo, Dad, myself and Mike Love, the main singer of the lead singer of the Beach Boys. It's a cherished possession of my father. So that was a nice one. So that was my music. Not exactly fire up music, but nice and cruisy.
I like that, Cam. It's a great story.
Do you crank up the music before you drive into a game, Scotty, and punch out a few words?
Well, usually I'm listening to the races or something like that to get me up and out. No, I just go with whatever, Cameron. I'm very easy to get myself up for a match report.
Nice. We better finish up there. I know I did promise last week that Tim Ludeman was going to join us. And yeah, he was going to join us, the Renegades player in the BBL, coach of Geelong in the Premier League. He was a last-minute withdrawal and apology, very apologetic.
Get one chance, Cameron.
Only one chance.
You don't reckon we'll let him back next week?
Big to just have... Oh, sorry, I've got other meetings.
Yeah, we've got people queuing up to get on this.
I'll pass on that feedback. It'll be passed on to Tim, and he might have to do his time in the twos.
Then a couple of bats my way, some kookaburra bats.
Good thinking. I like that, Stokesy. What a cash for comment or whatever they call it. We're open to plenty of that. All right, big thank you to Matthew Stokes, big thank you to Scotty Gullen and Jack Henry, Panther Tires, Deakin and Lake Imaging for all of their support throughout this podcast. We will be back again next week as we creep closer to round two, the Cats and the Hawks in, what are we talking now?
16 days, bring on the footy.
16 days.
Friday.
We will be back next week.